All right, welcome everyone to another deep dive. Today we're taking a look at a case that I think really brings up some really interesting questions about how our legal system works. The 1998 Massachusetts case, Commonwealth v. Woodward.
Yes, Woodward.
And, you know, you sent over a ton of material on this, kind of like a little legal analysis starter pack.
Yeah.
You know, we have excerpts from a fictional podcast, a detailed case brief, and a standard legal brief.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all focused on just this single event.
Mm-hmm.
So what we really want to do today is unpack sort of the major legal concepts that are at play here and, you know, the twists and turns that make this case such a great example of, you know, the balance of power in the courts.
Yeah, I think what's so fascinating about Woodward and why it's still relevant today is it really gets to the heart of, you know, when a jury makes a decision, what role should a judge play in potentially changing that decision?
Right.
And it really kind of brings up that classic tension between the jury as sort of this democratic voice and the judge's duty to make sure the law is applied fairly and, you know, justly.
Right.
So we're going to sort of unpack all of that.
Okay. Let's get into it. So for folks who may not remember the specifics, as you know, this tragic story starts back in February of 1997. 8-month-old Matthew Eapen suffers fatal head injuries while in the care of his au pair, Louise Woodward.
Mm-hmm.
And the prosecution argued that this was no accident, that this was a case of violent shaking and slamming that led to the baby's death.
Right. And the jury, after considering all the evidence that was presented at trial, they agreed with the prosecution.
Yeah.
And they found Woodward guilty of second-degree murder, which, as we know, is a very serious charge.
Right.
Carries a life sentence. So it would seem like, you know, the case had come to a close, justice had been served, but that's not really where the story ends.
That's where things take a really interesting turn. This is really, I think, the heart of the case, you know, where it gets into these checks and balances within our system. The trial judge in this case actually reduced the second-degree murder conviction down to involuntary manslaughter.
Wow.
And the sentence, time served, 279 days.
Wow.
So Woodward, who had already served that amount of time, was immediately released. Huge, huge shift.
Yeah, huge, huge shift. So that obviously leads to the question, how can a judge actually do that?
Yeah.
I mean, the jury has spoken. You know, how can a judge just change their decision?
Right.
And the answer is this thing called Massachusetts Rule of Criminal Procedure 25B2.
Okay.
And I like to think of it kind of like almost like a safety valve in the system.
Okay.
It allows a judge, either on their own or if the defendant asks, to reduce the verdict or even order a new trial if they think that the jury's decision was like just not right. Inconsistent with justice.
Okay. So this is really, you know, kind of like the judge gets to be a second opinion in a way. It's like a fail safe, like, oh, something went wrong with this jury decision.
Exactly.
So what was the reasoning here? Why did the judge think that second degree murder wasn't the right call in this particular case?
Well, the judge in this case, if you go back and look at the brief, the judge really focused on this idea of malice. And I think this is such an important concept.
Okay.
For second degree murder, you have to have malice. And that means you either intended to kill someone or you acted with this thing they call reckless disregard for human life.
Okay, so reckless disregard.
Reckless disregard. So let me give you an example.
Okay.
You know, firing a gun into a crowded room, that's reckless disregard.
Yeah, yeah. You're almost guaranteed to hurt someone.
Exactly. You know, it's just so careless that it shows that you don't care if someone lives or dies. And so the judge in Woodward's case said, you know, while her actions were negligent, they didn't rise to that level of malice that was needed for murder. And the judge pointed to Woodward's, you know, youth, her lack of experience as factors in this decision.
So it's really interesting, this, you know, there's negligence and then there's this, you know, what you need for a murder conviction, this specific state of mind.
Right.
And that's a key distinction here.
Huge distinction.
Now, let's get into something that I think is really interesting in this case. And it ended up being quite significant.
Yeah.
Woodward's defense team, during the trial, they actually objected to the jury being instructed on the lesser charge of involuntary manslaughter.
Oh, wow.
Why would they do that?
That's a big gamble.
Yeah.
That's a huge risk.
Yep.
It seems like they were really going for a complete win.
Right.
They wanted an acquittal. So they basically, by objecting to the manslaughter instruction, they said, okay, jury, you only have three choices here. First degree murder, second degree murder, or not guilty.
Right.
Their hope was that the jury wouldn't think there was enough evidence to convict her of murder.
Right.
And they'd just let her go.
And that backfired.
It backfired.
The jury comes back with second-degree murder, and now she's potentially facing life in prison.
Mm.
So it's like they created the very situation where the judge felt the need to step in and reduce that verdict.
Exactly. And I think this really shows how important trial strategy is and how, you know, one decision can have these huge ripple effects.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the appeal. The Commonwealth, understandably, felt like the jury's decision was thrown out unfairly.
Yeah.
And they appeal the trial judge's decision to reduce the verdict to the highest court in Massachusetts, the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts. They argued that the trial judge really overstepped their boundaries, that this undermines the entire idea of having a jury in our system.
Right.
So what did the Supreme Judicial Court say? Did they agree with the prosecution? Did they put the second-degree murder conviction back in place?
So they didn't. They actually upheld the trial judge's decision. They said, no, involuntary manslaughter is the correct verdict here. And their reasoning is really important. They basically said that excluding that manslaughter instruction, even though it was the defense that asked for it, was a mistake.
Right.
You know, it's almost like the highest court is saying, look, even if the defense asks for it, the jury should have all the options on the table. That's what makes a fair trial.
Right.
So the reduction was a way of fixing that initial mistake.
So I think that's really important for folks to understand.
Yeah.
The idea here is even if a defense attorney, you know, they're making a strategic choice to exclude that, mm-hmm. that the court ultimately, you know, the highest court said, no, a fair trial means the jury gets to consider all of the possibilities.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think it also highlights this principle that, you know, justice isn't just about what the two sides are arguing for. There are these bigger ideas about fairness and process that have to be maintained.
Right.
Regardless of what the two sides want.
It's not just about winning. You know, it's about making sure that the process works the way it's supposed to.
Exactly.
Now, there was a dissenting opinion in this case.
Yeah.
Justice Greeney had a different take on the judge's actions.
Yeah.
What were some of his main concerns?
Yeah. So Justice Greeney really focused on this idea that what the judge did, especially the reduction of the verdict and the quick sentencing that happened afterwards, could make people lose faith in the courts.
Mm-hmm.
He argued that, you know, that error with the jury instruction and then this kind of rushed sentencing just... it didn't look right.
Yeah.
And it could undermine, you know, public confidence in the legal system.
Right.
So he actually suggested that the sentence should be, you know, thrown out.
Wow.
And Woodward should be sentenced by a different judge to help restore that public faith.
Mm.
So it wasn't necessarily about, you know, disagreeing with the reduction to manslaughter itself. Mm-hmm. It was more about, you know, how it was done.
The process. The way it looks.
The way it looks, exactly, and the message it sends to the public. And
yeah.
I think that's a really important point, too, right? It's not just about, you know, what the law says on paper.
Right.
It's also about how people feel about the legal system.
That perception of fairness.
Exactly.
It matters.
It matters.
Which brings us back to, you know, Rule 25b-2, and it really shows just how powerful this rule is. It's like, even if there's enough evidence technically to support what the jury decided, if a judge thinks it's really unjust,
yeah,
they can step in. It's a really interesting check on the jury system.
Yeah. Big check. Big check.
And, you know, looking back at that choice the defense made, you know, to take out manslaughter as an option, it really, really could have backfired. I mean, they were trying to get her off completely.
Right.
And it almost ended with her, you know, in prison for life.
Exactly.
So it just, I think it really, really highlights for anyone involved in a trial, whether you're a prosecutor or a defense attorney, the importance of thinking through all the possible outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might have a strategy, you might be aiming for a win, but sometimes blocking those middle ground options, like manslaughter, it's really risky.
Yeah, you gotta be careful. Gotta be careful.
And, you know, something else that came up in the materials that I thought was interesting, you know, this idea that the medical examiner is considered a Commonwealth agent.
Oh, yeah.
What does that actually mean in this case? You know, what's the significance of that?
Well, I think it shows how closely the medical examiner, you know, the person who figures out how someone died.
Right.
It shows how closely they work with the prosecution.
Right.
And the court pointed out that, you know, in this case, Woodward didn't have a right to get her own autopsy.
Right.
Which I think brings up some interesting questions about, you know, bias and whether the defendant can really challenge the evidence that's being used against them.
Right. So it's this idea that the medical examiner is already sort of aligned with the prosecution from the start.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, this whole case really comes back to that question of, You know, where's the line between murder and manslaughter?
Right.
The judge here really felt that while Woodward was responsible for Matthew Eapen's death, you know, horrible tragic event, her actions didn't rise to the level of malice that you would need to say that it was murder.
And that's really the key, right? Malice means you wanted someone to die.
Uh-huh.
Or you acted in a way where you knew death was very likely.
Right.
And you just didn't care. You know, even if you're negligent, even if you're reckless, that doesn't automatically mean you had malice.
Right.
And so the judge in this case, I think, really focused on that distinction. Right. They said, look, what happened here is terrible, but it doesn't mean it was murder under the law.
So, yeah, it really does come back to that tension that we talked about at the beginning.
Yeah.
This idea of, you know, the jury is supposed to decide the facts, but the judge has a responsibility to make sure that the law is applied correctly.
Yeah.
And that the outcome is fair.
Exactly. And I think Woodward is just such a powerful example of how those two things, you know, the jury and the judge, can sometimes clash in really interesting and important ways.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up this deep dive on Commonwealth v. Woodward,
mm-hmm.
what are the big takeaways you think our listeners should walk away with?
I think there are a few. First, you know, Woodward really shows how important a judge's discretion is.
Okay.
They have a lot of power to make sure the system is fair.
Yeah.
You know, using things like Rule 25 B2.
Mm-hmm.
Second, we learned how crucial trial strategy is.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to those jury instructions and deciding whether to include lesser charges.
Like manslaughter in this case.
Exactly. Because leaving those options out can have huge consequences.
Mm.
And lastly, Woodward, I think, really highlights this ongoing debate about the jury and the judge.
Right.
The jury is the voice of the people, but the judge has to make sure the law is followed. And finding that balance, that's something we're still figuring out.
Yeah. And I think that's a perfect place to leave our listeners with something to think about. You know, given all this power that judges have, do you think it's a good thing?
Right.
Are there any downsides to giving judges so much authority? It's a really complex question, and I think it's something worth really pondering.
Absolutely. It's something we all need to be thinking about.
Well, thanks for joining me for this deep dive. I think this is a really, really interesting conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be here.
And thanks to everyone for listening to this deep dive on The Deep Dive.